So I just wanted to mention again with the each edition of the regional gatherings, we are creating a conference archive. So if you go to the website, you can pull up the conference archive. And because multiple people here mentioned language, I just wanted to point to a study that the last voice you heard, Charlotte Wolf from TV Nunavut, mentioned about the relationship between language and community well-being, and particularly suicide. And this study was made by psychiatrists, and they've come up with these community factors of like community well-being. And when language is present, and 50% plus one of the community is speaking, it makes a huge difference. It is the determining factor for well-being. So if you come here to this document and you look at page 5, you see Charlotte DeWolf, and she starts talking about this, and the study is actually linked in here somewhere. Actually, I don't see it right now.
Ahmed, Mr. Ahmed.
Was it Ahmed?
Ahmed.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Oh, you see it somewhere? Okay, I'm not like...
Ahmed.
So I had it?
Yeah.
Where is that? Oh, right here at the bottom. Cultural continuity as a hedge against suicide. That was the name of the study. And again, this is an open access resource. You can just go to this document, you click on that, you have this PDF. What's important about these studies is that when you go to funders and you ask for money for in-language programming, you point to the study and you say, this is why, for example. And that's something that TV Nunavut did in its licensing application to the CRTC. Any comments or questions on the policy or process? And if we could designate maybe like 10, 15 minutes to this, then we can get the next panel up.
Well, although I don't think I'm too stupid, I read this, and it did say Native Broadcasting Policy, but I didn't even realize it was the policy, because it's not written like a policy. It's written like I thought it was a little history leading up to the policy, because there's a whole bunch of words in here, but it's not clear which ones are policy and which ones are chat. Yeah.
The advertising thing is probably the closest thing with a certain benefit for advertising for a type B station.
Yeah.
But basically, it's like okay. A babysitter's note to the child.
And it's not really written like a policy. So it shows a couple of things that I guess the major thing, though, is it shows disrespect by CRTC to allow this kind of policy, A, to be written like this, and B, to allow it to go on for this long without looking at it. On the other hand, because it's so poorly written, it leaves the door wide open for us. And if we can, I think all of us in the First Nations communities think in the long run two things. We think community, but we also think sovereignty. And so by virtue of the fact that this is not clearly written, and also as a policy, and also by virtue of the fact that it's been on the table for so long, now is our chance. Now we can actually have an opportunity to write into it the kinds of things that we see are important. Because this thing, the policy can be both the goal and the process. But it needs more than two types. I think that's the most telling lack of knowledge of the CRTC, by giving two types when there are probably many different types of community radio. So that's just kind of my thoughts off the top of my head. And had I known that I was really reading the policy and not some history of the policy, because when I finished reading it, and I read it twice, I'm still looking for the policy. I even asked Kim, where's the policy? I mean, this, it's very unclear, and in my mind, disrespectful. You know.
Other comments? Other comments or questions on the policy?
Or the process?
A clarification maybe in terms of what we mean by process, because I know it's been asked a few times what we mean by that. Because it's a gray zone at the CRTC what that looks like, but we're talking about how they invite people for comments, how the public process that could take place, whether it's a paper process or if we have public hearings, or how we go about getting people's opinions on how things can change. So that's where we're at about the process. On top of that, there's the decision making and the rest of it, but at the front end too, would people be able to comment about this? How would they be invited or not or whatever to speak to the CRTC, or which members or people should speak to, etc.? So it's in that minutia or whatever of the details that we're looking at too. So if you have ideas, you know, to that we can put in the report in terms of how to do this, because there's nothing that says in stone that CRTC has to have a public hearing in order to X, you know. So this is where we are looking for that kind of information from you as well, in terms of process.
If you're curious about what the CRTC process is, there is a website, a page that they maintain, yeah, of their rules. So if you look up CRTC rules and procedures, you can get all their rules and procedures when it comes to public hearings. So that might help inform your ideas going forward.
Okay, so when we were having our planning meeting before we were coming out here, there was a couple of things that we were concerned about. One of them was the limitations on the advertising, commercial versus not-for-profit. We are a not-for-profit radio station on Six Nations, and our funding comes from gaming, comes from bingo. It doesn't come from the band. It doesn't come from any other sources. If we need to update our equipment, we have to write grants galore to be able to do any of that and become industry standard. So with having said that, one of the issues we're looking at is getting rid of the limitations for the advertising. If people like Rogers and Chorus want advertisers, there's specific people that are going to advertise with them, and chances are they'll have a lot of money. So we're not getting rich off of this. It's an opportunity for us to sustain ourselves, but in a way where we're not charging our communities top dollar, which they don't have, to be able to do advertising with us. Our community agencies that are funded through the band have a small budget where they are able to run advertising with us, but again, it's not anywhere near the cost you would pay if you went to Rogers or Chorus. So in that respect, we're trying to keep the advertising costs to a minimum so we can still get out the information for our community. And there's different things that our community wants, like our health services programs want to have their own, their own PSAs. They want to have their own public service announcements. They want to be able to relate to all the listeners with the information that they're trying to get out to the community. So that's, you know, those are some of the things we were considering. And the funding source assumption that the band covers everything. Not the case with us. We're registered NPO, not band funded, limited resources. Emergency services to the community. We just recently purchased our NDEC equipment from a sponsor from a tobacco cigarettes person in the community. So we were able to actually get that equipment that we needed to be funded. But it came out in it was either one of those things, we get the sponsorship, we didn't have the money, and if we didn't, we were closed. So, you know, those, just trying to keep your head above water when there's certain mandates that are issued through the CRTC with a complete lack of who they're placing these impositions on, and whether it could mean, you know, sink or swim for some people. So we're definitely in that boat. Because those mandated requirements are something that come at a cost most of the time. We would really like to see another, we would really like to develop a policy paper for a native C. I mean, if they're going to group us, we might as well have the pick of our group, and we might as well be able to develop the criteria for it to be able to submit it at their level. And some of the information that I see up there, like it's a proposed policy. They had no intentions, you know, it just kind of passed through. And the information that I'm reading on here, it's. I'm glad you said it, Dickie, because it's really disrespectful in a lot of ways. The 2.3 definition of native music, the commission has decided not to put forward a precise definition of the native music at this time, but they want to develop the policy. So just don't give us any definitions.
Yeah.
So, you know, information like that, and putting so many caps and restrictions on what we do, when generally what we're doing is for our own communities. So it's again, they're telling us what we want, and they're telling us what we are allowed to have, but they're not listening. They're nowhere at the stage of having any input to be able to produce something like this. So I think another thing I would suggest is having an Indigenous board that is able to sit down, come to the table and develop, okay, this is, while we're negotiating this, this is what we'd like to do. This is what we would like. This would help us be able to not so much compete, but get beyond the struggle and just survive, but flourish. Because the agendas for what the CRTC is issuing and the agendas for what Native communities want to put in their communities, they're two different things. We're not looking at getting rich, whereas they're more competitive and they need the advertising and they need to grow. We just want to educate our communities. So... I'm good. My rant's done.
No, it's not a rant. This is sharing, and this is wonderful. Thank you very much for that. Have you looked at the CRTC policies on advertising?
We have.
Okay, and there's no wiggle room there because they have a lot of categories for advertising that don't count for those 4 minutes of limited time.
We are looking at... I'd be interested in knowing how is it that with the advertising, they talk about protecting the stations.
Yeah.
On the competitive end, but there's also the versions of commercials translated into Aboriginal language will not be counted.
Yeah.
But yet they look at, okay, as long as we can get out the original message in a certain language, then the Aboriginal part isn't going to be counted. But then it sounds like to me it's not counted either way.
So this is the thing where obviously the policy needs to be clarified, but what you're pointing to as well is that some of these policies have been put in place to make sure that the other commercial interests are not impacted by your community interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where, who does the policy serve? Is the policy serving Native broadcasters, or is the policy serving for-profit, commercial, not even based in Six Nations, broadcasters in Hamilton or something? Like, who does this policy serve, and who does this restriction serve?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. In terms of the policy itself, What I began to realize is there is no policy. And why we say that is because we've been in this business of broadcasting since 1984. I got involved doing that myself in 1985, and then for television in 1988. During those years, while producing programming, especially for television, I was the camera person, I was the audio person, I was the lighting person, I was the editor, even to package the tape itself to ship off to be broadcast. I was all in one. So at the time I did not realize I didn't have to do all that. I shouldn't have done all that. Because in CBC land, TVO land, the guy that we see on camera doesn't do all that. So that's the policy that I wish for us to develop, that I wish for us to promote, that I wish for us to enshrine into policy. For all of us Indigenous language producers, programmers, broadcasters. We shouldn't be treated like that anymore. If I can jump from residential school, as I mentioned earlier, I was there. They put our language in a box so that it... I like to use analogies when I speak. And the analogy I used for the language was a flower. It's like a flower. That flower needs sunlight. That flower needs rain. That flower needs somebody to look at it. to admire it. That's how it nurtures itself. So the residential school policy took that flower and put it in a box. Killed it. That's the analogy I've used over the years. So moving forward, we've survived that. We are survivors. We're here. We speak the language. And now today we have we're under a process called the Truth and Reconciliation. So in essence, there's a commitment by government. So in essence, there should be a commitment by CRTC to throw away the old policy, to sit down with First Nations people, to develop a policy. And also in light of comments I made earlier about appropriation, we need to make room to protect our intellectual property, our knowledge. I spoke about climate change earlier. Science is now knocking on our doors, saying, oh, by the way, what were you saying about such and such, you know? My father was talking about those things back in 1980. A grandfather of mine was noticing things over 40 years ago. They knew far in advance of what we know now. As a young people, we were questioning or we were wondering, what are you talking about? You know, we never lived the full scope of a harsh winter. Today we live, the extent of our winters are like this, whereas before they were very extreme. So that's why we need to really make a commitment, or we really need to sit down and develop a policy that shows respect, recognition, and so that we can keep our languages. And one of the things that I found that we butted heads over the years as broadcasters or as journalists, journalism teaches you to ask questions, the 5 W's. With our history, it's an oral tradition. Much like the way you guys are listening now, that's the respect that was bestowed upon the speaker. And that's what I meant. We had challenges over the years where the trained journalists were looked down upon the broadcasters, because broadcasters would go up to the elder and ask them to speak about a certain topic, and they placed the microphone there, and off they went. And the journalist was going, hey, wait a minute. That's not how we do it, but it is. It's how we do it. It's how we. It's how our elders. It's how the language is spoken. You allow the person, much like just like the talking stick that it was. We each had a turn. When you're given the talking stick, that's your turn to speak. And that's the example that I use for recognizing an oral tradition, an oral history of people, because they have the story, they know the story, and then let them finish it. Don't interrupt, you know. That's what I wanted to share. You guys.
I wanted to add to somebody's mention about the funding link with regards to, essentially we're a public broadcaster, and that's what we do. We do the same thing CBC does. CBC is working on a $1.7 billion budget, and if we were to be equal by per capita, we would look at maybe having anywhere from 90 to 120 million to share. Right now, they started off with 13 communication societies sharing $8 million. This year, there's 27 applicants, and the amount's the same. So large organizations like ours keep taking hits every year for the smaller guy to get a little bit of the money, and what the feds aren't doing is increasing that pot. So I think if we were to look at, like Mike was saying, an Indigenous Languages Conference for broadcasters. It's because we have arguments with a lot of the English-speaking radio stations applying for the Northern Native Broadcasting Fund. Like, why are you applying for this if you're speaking English? You're just another Canadian radio station. So you, and that's where the policy needs to be described, that in order to be a Type B Native radio station, you should have to at least broadcast, you know, a certain percentage in the language. You know, and then there's a couple agencies like ours throughout Canada that have a massive income through their bingo proceeds, which topples our own budgets, yet they can attain money from the same budget that we're going from. So if you're making, if you're, like, I mean, when you start making $2 million over and above your funding, I think there's a possibility that you don't need funding anymore. Like, I mean, what are you doing with the profits? So essentially, when we get together, and it's like, the idea of having that national body, we used to have a national body, and then it got soaked into APTN, and then all of a sudden the radio body died. And then, you know, I don't think APTN's fulfilling the need. One of the people, I think it was yourself, saying that you're the first one in the Maritimes, and you're one person for all of the Maritimes. Well, how ridiculous is that when you have all those radio stations through here that could be connected through that network, like we are in Ontario, and, you know, we have the 35 community stations and our two hub stations. So, like, I mean, that's a larger network than APTN itself, and that's just in Ontario. And what we had proposed to APTN 2 years ago was that, you know, that they not go after these licenses. They allow the provincial bodies that have been there for 40 years to take these licenses over, Toronto, Ottawa, Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. And that way we would then create our own network so that we could start sharing our content like we were talking about earlier. And I think it would work smoother. You hear stories about, you know, when we do get together, we jump leaps and bounds. And I think that scares the feds because we're organizing too quick and we're sharing too much information. And it's, you know, it's, they don't want us to get too organized. It's better to keep everybody on phenylalanine or drunk or stupid so that they don't know what's the political process happening in front of their eyes. And by the time everybody wakes up, everything's gone. So I think it's time for us as communicators and oral communicators, it's time to start banding together again from coast to coast to coast. And I think with this conference, we look at pressuring the feds and increasing the budget for us to be all be able to attach to. What I was saying in Homolco First Nation was, if every little community applied for that funding right across Canada, 663 communities all applied for that from that same fund, they would have no choice but to either shut it down or increase the amount. So that's why if we could organize, get together, and all apply at the same time and just inundate them with paperwork, like, I mean, like they do to us, you know, like the last little bit of, and it's not all, you know, rainbows and butterflies, as the saying goes, dealing with the feds, because they do play bureaucratic games with you. And, you know, they're assimilating us through bureaucracy. And I know my argument, and I know Dickie was saying before we left about sovereignty, this idea of sovereignty is not viewed by them, so they don't respect it. Even though it does exist, they don't see it that way. They're our babysitters, and that's how it's going to be. But this last little bit, they strung us along for 2 months, not giving us our pullback from last year because of a signature. And this went to their audit phase in their financial department. And, you know, for 3 years, so I guess cross country, what the feds were telling me when they came to visit our radio station at Timmins was that a lot of the communication societies were losing funding or not getting their funding because they weren't doing the reporting properly. Well, for 3 years, we've had every report, all the I's dotted, T's crossed, on their desks on a due date. So they've had no reason not to, you know. And this time, it was almost embarrassing where I couldn't even get out to BC. We're part of this creation. They want to be a part of it, the funders, and it's like, you're holding back the money that I need to go to that thing. And then, you know, so the fund paid for me to go out to BC, but literally had to send them an email saying, well, my only objective right now is to inform our board that we need to do a mass layoff and shut down operations. Because we don't, you, that money was supposed to be here 2 months ago. And for 2 months, I've heard an excuse after excuse. And it was Mike who said, you know what, it's going to come back to you, and it's going to be something real small, and it's going to piss you off. And it was a wet signature. Where they, I have an email from their department saying I could use Adobe Digital Signature on the applications. I just haven't showed them that email yet. So it was so funny to come back as signature. Like, I thought we were being like a forensic audit was going to come on. We were going to, like, you know, go through the whole deal. And it wasn't. It was a signature. And I thought to myself, how hateful are our partners in Ottawa that they would put us through, like, the fear and living in that fear of having to lay people off and not being able to put food on those families' tables. And they've already done the work, you know. So it was... I think at this point now, like I say, Mike's idea with the conference, we get together, we start organizing to the point where, you know, we have to start flexing our muscle. And unfortunately, you know, being nice and quiet and stoic is not working anymore. We need to actually stand up and say, you're wrong. And, you know, the TRC, the IAP, the common experience payment, all of that was bungled by Canada completely to a degree where it's when we were like, I mean, Nora was one of the hardest working ladies I knew, and she was militant. And like, I mean, we had the ability to kill that deal because we had 5,000 members, and she was ready to go to bat every time. You know, like, I mean, she was not afraid. Like, anybody called up to say anything, you know, just direct them to me, John. Because I didn't want to talk to them like that. We had the funding come in. You got to think about the money, right? So, yeah, I think that's where we need to organize financially. And it's, these things are, we're public broadcasters. We're doing a service for our people just as much as CBC is. And we shouldn't be treated any differently.
Speaking about organizing, I've looked at the paperwork. It is complicated for funding.
Oh, for the funding from the Native Northern Aboriginal Fund?
Or any
fund.
Any federal government. If there is a central resource to help people get through that, would be awesome.
Because we're looking at that just for, we've been looking at tapping into the digital media fund, or I think it's the publishing fund, but that application is like 25, 30 pages long. Yeah, well, it's called the Canadian Publishing, but it's also, if you're in digital media, you can apply for it, and we're looking at it. It's very daunting.
Yeah. We qualify for it, but the paperwork is just insane.
Yeah. There was also, in addition to the idea for the Indigenous Language Broadcasting Conference, I just wanted to highlight the idea that Kim had shared around having a board at the CRTC that's Indigenous. This is also similar to what the Les Carpenter had said in Edmonton, who comes from the Northwest Territories, broadcasting with CKLB for 40 years. He also believes there needs to be an Indigenous arm of the CRTC, like we have an INAC and an ICID as two separate arms. We need an Indigenous arm of the CRTC, like you said, a board that's Indigenous. So I just wanted to highlight that your comment related to Les's presentation from Edmonton, if you want to go back and have a look at that, Les Carpenter. So we have Claudine, and then Carolyn, and Morris, did you have your hand up? I'm sorry about that. Okay, can I go to Morris first? Is that okay? I'm sorry about that.
I just had a comment. I guess I think it's kind of related to what was mentioned before, that I would like, in the future, I would like to see Native exemption status apply to broadcasters currently operating with Native Type B licenses in markets where they pose no significant threat to advertising revenues of their competitors. My name escapes you, but I believe you mentioned something about maybe Type C license or something like that?
Chems and other types are needed, yeah.
Okay, like, so yeah, it's like, to me, if, for example, Goose Bay, we had to apply for a Native Type B license for Nain and a technical amendment for Goose Bay, because in Goose Bay there's a country radio station which we pose absolutely no threat to for advertising revenue, right? But we were forced to do it that way because of the way things are set up.
So Morris is pointing to the policy where it talks about exemptions. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to whose profits are you going to affect, not whose community are you going to serve, kind of thing.
So on that, just to, there has been comments in, I forget where they were, I think it might have been in Cowett. Yeah, Cowett. I think it's Charlotte, though. By having exemptions, there are funds then you're not allowed to have. So that would need to be... I'm thinking in French.
Harmonized.
And thank you. I think in my own language too, most of the time. So it would be to be harmonized. And so just point that out, just so that we note it in our report. If that's what you want or suggest, we could add that tidbit too.
Okay. Just following from what is being said, when we go to, when we show up in Ottawa in June, we will be bringing forth a paper that will talk about a Type C policy that we can submit for grinding in the organization. This is the last thing I'm going to say. And following from my friend Aggie Baby over here, I'm going to plant a seed. I'm an old girl, and for all my life, somebody has told me I was an Indian. There's even an act that tells me I'm an Indian, and they give me this card that tells me I'm an Indian.
Has a number on it, right?
A number. Okay. And I'll tell you now, I am not an Indian. I'm Kanyangihaga.
Yeah.
And that's Mohawk in English. And we're from the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. In English, it's the Iroquois Confederacy. So one of the things that, the seeds that I want to plant is, I would like people to think about how such a policy can address our nationhood. And not try to address us as a homogeneous Indians living in this country, because we're not. We are, as nations, as diverse as Eastern and Western Europe. They surely don't expect the Italians to be the same as the Germans, and they surely don't expect the Dutch to be the same as the Hungarians, because they're not. And we are not. And frankly, I'm getting a little bit tired of somebody telling me who I am. And I can say that because I don't really care about what the government does or says. So when we go forward and use the radio stations, and I'm talking only about radio at this point, when we go forward and use the radio stations to enhance our nationhood, because that's what we're talking about, we need to be connected to all of our sister communities across the country. Now, like the Anishinaabe people are really, really big and far apart. Skagit people are big and far apart. The Inuit people are big and far apart. But the Haudenosaunee people, we're just a few small communities in southern Ontario, but we cross the provincial border and we cross the international border. But I know that if they could listen to us, our sister communities across the border, they would, because we as a people have not recognized that border anyway. So we need to talk about how we communicate with our sister communities who are the same nation as us. So I'm planting that seed. I hope you'll think about it. And in time, I hope that it will come about, because then we'll really be talking about sovereignty in action. Danito. That means I'm done.
It's great that radio crosses borders so easily, huh?
So just to comment, I mean, I've been around since we We started planning a radio station at Six Nations New Credit. It's in 1987. That's just interesting. I was reading on one of the links. It has that Charles Fairchild. I was the interview person there. He looked at all of the files I had on the radio station. We went through and spent like a month, I think, doing the review in the community and interviewing different people. So I just want to make one comment about the language that we talked about it being live and a living thing. And I remember one of the doing our language in the community, we had a presentation and on the radio station with the speakers. And one of the things he said was, the day you start writing it down is the day it dies. That was his word. Never forgot that. You know, that when we talk about it being diverse and let it be what it is, the way you say it and what you say type thing, and that's where dialects come in. And that, but he was pretty strict about that. Yeah, you learn your language out of a book. But right now is better than nothing. But that was his comment. When we say our languages are dying, he said they died the day we started to write them down, because they don't live on in their diversity. Yeah. So So the comment I want to make about the review of this policy, as it is that it appears to be a contradiction. When we talk about in this day and age, all the things that are happening with us, the Truth and Reconciliation, the Royal Commission 20 years ago type thing, all these new things, new liberal government, type thing. And so the door's kind of open, I feel, optimistically, that the door's open for us to make some significant strides. And that, of course, I've been on radio all the time, so I believe in radio. And even new media, so that to me the contradiction is we're removing, and CRTC is moving and pushing and supporting and advocating for all this digitization that's going to, the whole world's going to be together, right? And we can talk and across the world. So for us, as a native radio, or a native TV, or a native media, that we're less and less of a threat to the impact of the world because everybody's doing it and we can jump in and everybody can do it. So if down the road in the review of the policy, we're part of and not restricted to a special category, even though if nothing else, we go to Native C, let's just make a new one that fits. But just reading through and hearing today about the change in the world, that when I think the day that we're not identified as separate, that's a success rate, because we can be just as, the same as, but in our languages and in our ways. But unfortunately, we have to get designated in almost ghettoized into a segment that's not going to really participate. But I think the opportunity, if we can wrap our minds around it, in the new age, new media, new dimensions that are out there, that we have a different future ahead of us, that we should really figure out what it is we're going to do with it. So just a comment. I'm sensing this confusion and about what it really is that we're trying to do. So, my comment.
So, coming forward, we will have two forums in Ottawa, specifically 1 hour on the process and 1 hour on the policy. So, as much as you want to bring to that,